Welcome to another episode of Give 'Em Hell, Bring 'Em. Jeff, I'm glad you're back with me.
I didn't listen to the whole thing last week.
It was that bad. You didn't even listen to the whole thing.
Well, I mean, I rarely listen to the whole thing if it's any.
Yeah, because you already know what we're saying because you just recorded it yourself.
That is true. No, I didn't listen to the whole thing, but I listened to a good majority. You did well.
It's like terrifying. Like it's honestly,
a little different.
I don't know, like how I don't know, like how Mitch Harper does it on Cougar Tracks, or like, you know, some of the, or Jay Catch does it on his like Locked On Cougars. Like, I don't know how these solo guys do it without having, like, if you have an interview come in, it kind of breaks it up, fills up some time, and then you can talk about it before and after. That's one thing. But just like going straight solo for 45 minutes or an hour was terrifying.
Yeah,
like, and tough. I think the thing that I didn't realize the most, or was the biggest issue, is like, there's a lot of things that, and people don't really, you know, realize this. Here's your behind the scenes peek into the making of an amateur podcast. You and I are constantly texting each other during the show as we record, right? Because we'll have an agenda and we'll say, you know, skip this next thing, do this, or like, oh, let's talk about this now. Like, I've got a way to work it over, or we, you know, one of us will think of something. And so it's like, you know, you say, oh, we start talking about something, you say, oh, let me look that up. Right. And it's if I say, let me look that up really quick, you can keep talking while I'm looking. I can't talk and look at the same time. Right.
It's different. It's a different beast. I've done it twice and I don't think either one of them have gone especially well. So you did well.
We got to, yeah. So I think I haven't looked, I've been too scared to look and see. I wish maybe we need to look at a different platform or something for actual hosting, because I'm curious to, I want to know like the drop-off points of the episode, right? Like, I want to see, like, we see how many listens we get.
You know,
I want to know, I mean, like, I want to know how many people are actually listening to it all the way through, or, you know, episode by episode, because I feel like even though the number of listens may have stayed the same this week over other weeks, there were not people going all the way to the end.
Well, we do have, and now who knows how accurate this is, because like you say, our platform isn't the best.
It's also free, so... Thank you, Spotify, for hosting it for free.
You get what you pay for. But according to what is available to us, you really didn't have much of a drop-off. That at the 18-minute mark to the 21.5, almost 22-minute mark, there was only less than 70% retention during that time frame. But everywhere else, you were north of 75% throughout that whole hour.
There we go.
So that's good. I mean, if we compare that, we got to scroll down a little bit. But if we go to the episode 62, that was Jeff Solo, there's a very clear point where people got sick and tired of listening to me. And so I get it. At 29:42, everybody just left and they never came back. So you outperformed me. And that is really, I think, the ultimate goal here is to just be better than one another.
And, you know, if we're constantly doing that and constantly succeeding at doing that, then we're well on our way, you know?
To something. We do have, I mean, it's not news yet. And even when it is news, it probably won't be news. But somebody did approach me. This is the first time this has happened. We're not going to go into specifics because I don't know them. But somebody approached me and said, I love what you guys are doing. I have I don't know if we called it a formula, a method. I don't know what it is, but I have a way that I can help you guys take this next level. And he started to throw around some numbers that I laughed in his face when he said them. Like it probably is fake. I'm probably going to maybe be swindled. I don't know. But either way, it was a little bit flattering that at least somebody listens to us. And here's the story. So this person actually approached my dad. And while he was discussing the show with my dad, the show, the newsletter, the stuff we do on the site, somebody else was there and just happened to overhear the conversation and turned around and was like, wait a minute, Jeff Hansen and Give 'Em Hell, Bring 'Em, that's your son? And it was like validation of what this dude was saying. Be like, hey, there's people who listen because some random
your dad
just overheard the conversation.
I know Randy paid that guy to say that.
Right? Probably.
Like it was just like, hey, I need a... you know, hype this up a little bit.
He's looking out for us. So probably. But either way, I mean, all that is to say that whatever we're doing, it is working. I went back not too long ago, a few weeks ago, and I went and listened to like episode 1 and 2 of the show. And we weren't bad, like relative to where we were, right? Like we didn't know each other. We didn't really know what we were talking about. We didn't know how it worked. It wasn't terrible from you know, like at the start.
Right.
But compared to where we are today, whew, it's tough to listen to. It was very bad.
A lot of that was audio quality, right? We learned some things. We got some feedback. And I mean, the person that, until there was torrential downpour today, you were going to go meet with them, right? Was the plan. So
it's been but it's like for tomorrow.
Okay. This guy is like
he's legit.
You like influencers in Utah. Like that's like he basically runs a marketing agency for influencers, more or less, right? Yeah. That's his thing.
Yep. Well, I mean, I guess I don't really know. We'll know more tomorrow, but that sounds like that is the general idea. Yes. And so that's great. You know, I'm pretty pumped about it. We'll see. But that is, I thought it was validating that, you know, it's not 1280. It's not KSL. It's not a sports outlet that's coming to us and saying, hey, we want to help you guys, partner with you guys or whatever. It's an influencer guy. Because that is, Garrett, really
We're fanfluencers.
Yeah, we are fanfluencers. We have an exciting newsletter coming out on Friday that's going to include some of the things you just need to own in order to be an effective BYU fan. And one of those things that we've been talking about before we started recording the show is a Viking drinking horn. It really is meant for, beer. Like it's a Viking, whatever, Irish thing. And if you want to fill it up with whatever kind of whiskey, whatever kind of liquor you want, great, do it. Please do. If you don't, you still need to have it. And it's going to be part of our newsletter. And that's what we really are. We want to be fanfluencers. We want to make your game day experience better. And that's what everything that Give 'Em Hell Brigham has been built upon. So having said that, you got to subscribe to the newsletter. Like at this point in time, I look at how many people listen to the show. I know how many people subscribe to Cougar Sports Insider. Everybody knows how many people follow me. Like I'm not, you know, I'm certainly not Kanye. You know, I'm not Kim K.
I think you're close though.
I don't have an inordinate amount of followers, but I have a decent amount of followers. So I know how many people can at least see what I have to say. And I know how many people listen to what you and I have to say on this show. And I know how many people read what we have to say on the site on Cougar Sports Insider. At this point, if you are within the realm of our voice or the realm of our reach, why the hell haven't you subscribed to a free newsletter? Like what do you have to lose at this point? Now there's a paid model, and obviously please subscribe to the paid model. On September 1st, we're going to make the division happen, and there's going to be paid and free content, and it's going to be a little bit different. But even the free model is great. And the worst thing that happens is you don't like it and you click unsubscribe. That's it. That's all. You're out nothing but the 10 seconds that it takes you to delete an email and click unsubscribe. Why haven't you subscribed to the Give 'Em Hell Brigham newsletter?
And we've got 2 more weeks, basically right through the Arizona game, right? It's, where we got 2 more weeks through the Arizona game where we're given everything, full access. You can come join us on Discord, right? You can
the
chat.
Discord's been popping.
It's popping. It is great. Like it's significantly has slowed down traffic to the 24/7 board. And also
a little bad.
And the Discord is open to everybody though. Like it's once we get into September and we do have, you know, our paying customers or paying subscribers, we will do some more VIP. Like there'll be like more Q&A channels, things there. But the Discord, it's popping and like a lot of cool stuff. Like we can do audio, you can do like huge Zoom type things.
Speaking of audio stuff, now that I am I don't know if it's a verified thing or if it was just a new feature on Twitter and it happened to coincide with when that happened, but I officially got notification that I could start charging people to join my Twitter spaces. I'm gonna try it, but I think it will be a real shot. Well, you could start these little, like, it's almost like this little chat room.
Oh, so it's different than fleets. They got rid of fleets.
But it, you like charge admission. Like you can decide how many tickets you want to allot, and then people buy those tickets. Now that's probably pretty cool if you're LeBron James and people like people want to hear what you have to say, and you have 100 tickets available. I think it would be a real kick to my ego's nuts because I'd charge, you know, 50 cents a ticket, and I'd get nobody who subscribed except for maybe, you know, my dad and Jay Catch. Like Jay right. Catch, you're a fan, and I appreciate it. But that's probably it. So
this is like, it's like Clubhouse, but on Twitter.
Yeah. Yeah. That's okay. Exactly what it is. So it's kind of cool. Anyway, subscribe to the newsletter, folks. Like it's free. And once the paid stuff, once it gets separated, it's going to be really, really cool. And you got to pay a little bit of money to get the best stuff. And that is a perfect segue into what I wanted to talk to you about. How much, Garrett, would you pay in order when you die to be buried next to Marilyn Monroe or Hugh Hefner? How much is that worth to you?
Like nothing. I do not care about.
That's probably fine. What if we Lavelle? How much would you pay to be buried next to Lavelle?
Oh, I would pay exorbitant amounts of money.
Would you pay $2 million? Because if you pay $2 million.
I would not pay $2 million.
$2 million, you could be buried next to Marilyn Monroe or Hugh Hefner right now. And I think there's a number of other celebrities that are also allowing them, I don't know how, like their estates. I don't know who it is because they're dead. I don't know how they're allowing this. But you can now pay to be buried next to people, but it's like one of those, I don't know how to describe it, but I'm probably gonna offend somebody, I'm sure. But like what am I thinking of? What is the Frank Underwood House of Cards, like the cemeteries that they have that are like the indoor cemeteries where you like walk in and it's just like the walls of people that are dead, and you like get buried in like a drawer rather than like an outdoor cemetery where there's like grass everywhere and headstones. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
That's what these are. So you could get your drawer slid right next to Marilyn Monroe, and it only cost you $2 million.
That's ridiculous. I do have a last will and testament. Jessica Tyler put it together. I think she listens to the show. You've probably seen her on the Twitter. She's an estate attorney in Utah. So if you are in need of such services, reach out to her.
Hashtag not an ad.
This is legitimately not an ad. She just, I met her in the parking lot at a tailgate once, and when she came with her family, and then she helped me out. Anyway, in my last will and testament, it actually says the request to be cremated, and then there is a request for a drone to be flown over Lavelle Edwards Stadium and have my ashes spread on the football field. So that's,
you know, that's a gamble though, man, because here's the thing. How old are you? You're like 30. You're not old.
Yeah.
Are you 30 yet?
Yeah, I am 30, and I'm 30 and a half even now. So I'm well over the hill.
Yeah. So you're 30. Let's just say let's be very, very conservative, and you die at 75. I hope you live longer. 75. That's 45 years from now. There is not a chance that BYU is not using turf in 45 years. So you're going to get dropped onto that turf and then just vacuum it up and then you're gone.
Oh, that's a good point.
So might want to reconsider that. Like maybe
I just need a turf clause.
Yeah. Like maybe into the dirt of a baseball field somewhere.
Above, it could just be like over the Y and just like on the side of the mountain.
Oh, there you go.
They're not putting turf up there.
No. Well, I mean, I don't know. After the debacle that was the Rainbow Y, who knows what they're going to do with the Y?
Oh gosh, that was bad.
I have another question for you. It's more of a theory. Okay, when I ask you, what is the experience like at the Chick-fil-A drive-thru? What do you think? Like off the bat, what do you think it is?
So Chick-fil-A drive-thru.
Don't think about it. Just like, what is it good or bad?
it is generally good but overrated, because it is usually, like, considering the sheer volume of cars that they get through there, it is good. But at the same time, there's sometimes it's just still so busy that it's like it's not worth waiting through.
Well, like, so they somebody who did it, somebody, Anthony Alanez, I don't know who that is. They did some research. Oh, a new study from Sea Level HX has done a study that of all of the drive-thrus in the world, well, not in the world, but of all, like, the main chains, KFC, Taco Bell, Carl's Jr., Burger King, McDonald's, Dunkin', Wendy's, Arby's, Chick-fil-A, all those. Chick-fil-A actually has the longest time, like the longest wait time from pull in to pull away with the bag of food in your hand. And it's by a pretty substantial margin. So they measured everything in seconds. 488.8 seconds is the average wait time of a Chick-fil-A visit. So what is that, like 8 minutes? I don't know. I'm thinking off the top.
Close to eight, yeah.
Yeah. That's not great, but, like, you don't think about it, right? Because it's like, oh, they've got the dude with the vest. He's taking your order, like, 4 miles away from the window. They make you pay before you get around the corner. Like, there's lots of things that make you feel like it really isn't that bad. But it's actually a pretty substantial margin between Chick-fil-A and the next slowest of Arby's at 394 seconds.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you're talking a minute and change, almost 2 minutes, right? Yeah. A minute and a half between the two. So I wonder how much of it is just like the volume. Like, it's, cause I can tell you the line at Chick-fil-A, here's it's everything huge. Else on this is very, is always consistently longer than Arby's, Wendy's, Dunkin', which people are only getting coffee there, McDonald's, Burger King, Carl's Jr., Hardee's, which those are the same restaurants, so those should have been combined, Taco Bell, and KFC. You flip the little switch, I think. There you go. Our headsets have a it's very
the dumbest switch.
Yes, there's like a mute switch, and if you like tap it, then it mutes it. And we run into this
amateur podcast.
Yes, amateur podcast. But it's like, I almost was like, well, yeah, all those other places, no one goes there. Relatively, but no one goes there. And so that's
here is my question about this, because I've had this theory, and this article kind of, like, I don't know if it confirmed my theory, but it made me wonder harder. Is the Chick-fil-A drive-thru really as long as it looks? Like, if they got rid of the checkpoints along the drive-thru where you're taking your order and then stopping forever ahead of the menu, and then you are paying forever ahead of the window, and they just did it like a normal drive-thru, would it actually be as long? Like, I really think this. I think that Chick-fil-A might know that they're slow, and so they do those other things so that it looks like the line is long. Because here's what it is. Every time I go to the drive-thru, after I order, either after I order or after I pay, but after one of those checkpoints, I have like 8 car lengths between where I'm at and the next stop. Where if we all would pull ahead those 8 car lengths, then that line doesn't look anywhere near as intimidating when you're pulling into the Chick-fil-A.
That's true. That, there may be something to that, right? Because it's like, would you rather... If you got to drive somewhere for 15 minutes, would you rather drive like 10 miles further, but it's on the freeway, and so you're just cruising? Or do you want to be driving on surface streets where you're hitting a red light and that 15 minutes is spent just sitting at a red light? Exactly. Like, I would rather drive farther, but keep going. And so I know this is kind of the opposite. Well, I guess it's really opposite, but it's like you have those checkpoints where you're like, you feel like you've accomplished something. So it kind of resets that patience clock.
I think that's what it is. I think that Chick-fil-A has unlocked the ticket. Like, we all think that their service is great because they are so fast at the drive-thru. Well, okay, if you look at the hard data, they're actually the slowest. Well, they say my pleasure. Like, okay, that's great. But most other places say you're welcome. Is it really that big of a difference? But you just notice the my pleasures a little bit more.
Right.
Also, I learned on TikTok, Chick-fil-A has an honor code, not an honor code, but like a dress code. Like, they are not allowed to have unnaturally colored hair. Like, nobody has purple hair in Chick-fil-A. Men are not allowed to have beards. they have to be clean shaved or have a well-groomed mustache. And I can't remember, there's something else, but like they have a very tight dress code at Chick-fil-A.
Huh. That is interesting.
I think it's all mind games, man. I think Chick-fil-A is just screwing with us all. Like they have tricked us all into thinking that service is great, when in reality, it's just a bunch of like flashy mirrors and flashy toys and things that are cool on the surface, but the service actually kind of sucks.
You know, there's something to be said for that, right? Like it's very much a, I remember going out and to lunch with an executive in my company, where, you know, it was like, I'd maybe been a year into like post school into my career. And he said, like, in the terms of business, right? Like in terms of office politics, perception is reality. Mm-hmm. And then just in general in life, a lot of these, like whatever someone, however somebody perceives something, that is their reality, right? Like it's, yeah, as long as you perceive that the line is moving fast, the line is moving fast. You don't care about the fact that it's 488 seconds and KFC is 283 seconds, right? Like KFC is almost half, like twice as fast. They're cooking chicken all the same, right? But twice as fast. And so I think there's something to be said for that in terms of just giving a good customer experience. Like if you make a better product, people are willing to wait for it and willing to pay more for it. Mm-hmm. And so I think there's a lot to be learned from this, more so than anything else. I don't remember the last time I went to Chick-fil-A, because Cane's just opened up, and the Cane's is actually next door to the Chick-fil-A here in my town.
What is the Newsies? No, it's not Newsies. What is the stupid musical where they fight? I've ruined the joke. Never mind. Move on.
I think it is Newsies, isn't it? I don't know. You're snapping your fingers, so it's got to be
Newsies. Yeah, well, like that's what they do. Somebody tell us what it is. I don't know what it is. My wife's here. West Side Story. Oh, that's what it is. Yeah, not Newsies. She's so annoyed, just for what it's worth, that I didn't know that. She's looking at me. She's like,
filing for divorce right now.
You uncultured idiot. That's what she's thinking.
That's maybe we should change this subtitle of the description of the newsletter to a newsletter for uncultured idiots.
Yeah, that's probably it.
It's a little more on the nose, a little more apt description. But yeah, I am surprised though that the gap was that big.
It's huge. That's a big gap.
And speaking of gaps, the gap is much smaller now in terms of financial duress of attending BYU as a football player between walk-ons and scholarship
players. When did this happen? This happened after last week's show, right?
Yep. I recorded on Tuesday and scheduled it for Wednesday. And then this got announced on Thursday morning.
Right? So nobody's got to hear either of our thoughts.
Nope. We shared a little bit on the Discord and a little bit on the 24/7 message board. I was very surprised. So I got a text message from somebody who I know will be listening to this. Thank you for texting me. Said the do. Oh, that was from. It was on Thursday. And he said, something big is being announced, but I don't know what it is. And I was like, what? And then I was like, okay. I was like, my reply was, I'm knowing BYU, I'm expecting a home and home with Ball State. And then the word was quote. So he was quoting me a quote. So secondhand, right? Was from the quote was, we're about to change college football. That's all I'm going to say. And so I was like, okay, what could this legitimately be? Right. And I was very shocked and pleasantly surprised. And then as quickly, I mean, we found out that it was the built thing. And, but it was, it's a big deal. Like it's people. So I guess the details of it, in case you've been living under a rock, haven't seen it yet. So their Built Bar is paying the tuition for all walk-on players. So walk-on players will receive a full tuition. And then scholarship players will receive an additional $1,000. All players will wear Built. All players will wear like Built logos on their jerseys and helmets in practice. And so that's in all those things. Scholarship players will have to do one event a semester. Walk-on players will have to do at least two events a semester. I imagine there will be more for non-LDS players because they're getting paid more. So that has to be like, they have to provide more work in order to be compensated at a higher rate.
And I would be shocked if those events aren't just like football team events, right? Like,
yeah.
Yeah. Like it would be stupid not to, after seeing the reaction and how it all went down this last week, built BYU, they would both be dumb to not capitalize on that momentum and do, you know, phase two, chapter two of here's the walk-ons, here's built, here's what they're doing now that they have a little extra time or money right. or whatever.
Right. And so there's a lot of things to break apart with this. One is, you know, and it's been funny because there've been a few articles about this that have gotten shared on the college football subreddit, and the comments are always hilarious. Like one person was very convinced that BYU is going to be sued for charging non-LDS students more. It's like, well, one, this has been going on for like over 100 years. So I think it would have been caught by now. And someone was like, well, how is it any, someone was like, no, it's not. Someone logically was like, no, it's no different than public schools charging in-state versus out-of-state tuition. It's just LDS or non-LDS tuition. And that's what many Catholic schools do too. And they're like, well, that's different because the in-state tuition, like the tax dollars are going for towards it. So it's like those people are already paying into it. And it's like, okay, let's talk about this, our Jesus tax, AKA tithing, right? Like it's not a lot of critical thinking here. The more time I spend on the internet, the more ashamed I am of the public education system in America, just based on the overall general lack of critical thinking, but right. I digress. So the big thing here is that this is not a lot of money. Like this is the ultimate like bang for your buck PR for Built, because it's relatively not a lot of money. So you're talking about, okay, 85 scholarship guys, and then like you have 85 scholarship guys and then a 110 camp roster. So you're talking about 25 walk-ons, right, that are getting full amount. So even if you, which I don't even know what the majority of the walk-ons are LDS, right?
Yeah, I mean, they announced like 36, because I think you're going to have practice squad guys. Like there's always those carryovers that are.
Oh, that show up the first day of school and stuff.
Right, gray shirts. I mean, there's a handful of funny things that can happen. But even if we just take their numbers and it's 36 guys, I wrote it in one of our newsletters, but 30 guys or 36 total players, I assumed 30 were Mormon, 6 were not. That's right. Probably generous,
right?
But just for math purposes, and it was less than $500,000. Like it wasn't crazy amount of money.
If they had 36 guys, 36 guys, all LDS, that is $6,000 a year, $216,000 plus $85,000 for scholarship players, you're right at $300,000, right? Like that's not that big of a corporate
it's
sponsorship.
Not. And the other caveat that kind of got like lost in the media, in the videos, and in the like the cool factor of the story is the Built was already a corporate sponsor at BYU. Like there was already a relationship there. And this was an enhancement of that existing relationship. And that was in BYU's press release. And so for all we know, it really is a sunk cost, right? That maybe they added an extra 50, 100K or something on top of what they were already giving to BYU, and then just restructured how Built gets advertised or where Built gets advertised. Like this really probably cost Built pennies, and they're going to advertise that over the course of a year. I mean, this is nothing for Bill.
I really want to know who it, like, I want to talk to someone, which I did reach out to them about, you know, getting them on the show after. So it's, I mean, that's part of why it's the Built for Life Foundation, right? Is because that was working with Built, right? And so the CMO at Built, is someone who's from my hometown. His dad was my state president growing up. He is working and he's like, part running, like if you look at his LinkedIn, you see like CMO of Built, and then also running like the Built for Life Foundation at BYU. And so that's like, you know, they've been working closely together for a long time, and it really is relative pennies compared to what they do. But like other schools could not do this. Like if you look at tuition, like in the WCC, for example, I looked this up a couple of years ago. BYU is the cheap, obviously the cheapest tuition at $6,000 a year for LDS students, $12,000 for non-LDS students. The next cheapest tuition was like, I think it was Pacific, was like $42,000 a year, right? Oh, yeah. Like if you're looking at Stanford at $55,000 a year, if Stanford is looking at $55,000 a year for, you know, 36 players, that's $2 million a year, right? Like it's not, it is a very, the cost difference is like, you know, endowing things. Obviously other schools that are bigger, they have more endowed scholarships and whatnot. And part of this too is that BYU is also able to do this because Utah doesn't have a state NIL policy. Like there's other states where the state strictly prohibits this, and it is a bit of a gray area. And it's something where BYU is very aggressive into the gray area, which I think the tides are changing, right? Like it's, we've always said like, oh, BYU fans are cheap, which a lot of you are very cheap. We know it. It's fine. It's,
we know exactly how many subscribe to the newsletter. So, I mean, we know. And I also know exactly how many of you take my information off of Cougar Sports Insider, have an anonymous username on Cougar Board, post it as if it's your own inside information, and then all of the rest of you that glom onto that as if it's great. Like, we also know that that happens. And we, so really, while we only have like 500 or so subscribers at CSI, I know that there are thousands of you who are partaking of my inside information because of free Cougar Board and people who steal information.
This is true. Piracy is not good. And so it's, you know, being able to do that is, you know, it's just very cost effective, and it is a gray area. And I think the shackles are kind of like coming off in terms of financials and saying like, hey, we need to be aggressive. And it's like, and we're seeing where there's kind of been a changing of the guard, right? Like it's, you look at the big sponsors around, like obviously there's still the new skins and stuff, but it was kind of like BYU's always had their, like the tried and true, you know, donations, like the companies that have been in Utah County forever. And it's kind of there, and it's like, oh yeah, we give this, and that's kind of our thing. And, you know, it's, we have the, it was, you know, very much of, we have a bunch of people giving us a small to medium amount of money, and that's kind of how ho-hum how we've done things. And it's, you know, the joke of like, oh, you know, the Mormons will go to Vegas and won't break one of the 10 commandments or a $10 bill, whatever. And it's, there's a lot more young money though. Like it's, you look at Silicon Slopes, all the majority of the tech money in Utah slants BYU, whether they're active in the church, like guys like Josh James, right? Don't, like, he's not active in the church at all. I don't even know that if he would describe himself as LDS at this point. I don't know his personal beliefs, but I'm pretty sure he's not active. I don't care one way or the other, but he still obviously is a huge BYU fan. And even people who are, you know, do not have any, like, may have zero positive feelings towards the church, whatever. It's like, it's, but the majority of that tech money is BYU related. And as that money comes in, right? Like you have like Pluralsight, Divi, Qualtrics, like those are all companies that got sold for over $1 billion or went public, right? They are all companies that give to BYU and give handsomely. And it's, you know, and they want to do it. And it's the, obviously the arms race of paying coaches $20 million a year, whatever, you know, I think Saban's making 11 at Alabama, whatever, like that's not going to happen.
He is still the most underpaid person in all of
it. It's true. And honestly, if there, like the thing is there's never, like the money will always be there, right? Like it's, the money will always be there, because if somehow, like if Kalani Sitake somehow ran the table, whatever, BYU got into the college football playoff and teams were coming and knocking on his door and it was a matter of money, then the money would be there. That wouldn't be the problem, right? Yeah, but it's stupid to go out and pay $5 million just because you could say, oh, you're paying $5 million, like everyone else is making $5 million to end up in the same place, right? And so it's the money is there. And so I think this is kind of just, and also just the kind of getting away from the, like, oh, you know, like, oh, BYU is hard to work with, BYU is just sitting pat. And we kind of, you talked about this a lot, right? With independence and, you know, being able to be in charge of your own destiny and kind of run with things. Huge. And that being a huge thing. Like if you're in a conference, maybe there's a conference and I go, well, you can't do this. You're, everyone else in your conference gets pissed.
So this is an area, and you touched on it, and this is my big thought. So one, awesome for the walk-ons. Walk-ons work so damn hard, like way harder than anybody realizes. Walk-ons have it rough. BYU does a really good job, always has, of making it as smooth, I guess, as they can for walk-ons, but it's tough. It's a grind. So good for the walk-ons, first and foremost. Good for them. I hope that the money, if it's not built, I hope it's somebody else, and I hope that they do this every year forever because it's awesome for those walk-ons. The biggest takeaway for me, and I wrote about this in our newsletter when it first came out. So this was the last Friday's newsletter. Please subscribe. We're going to continue to harp on this until people subscribe. It's great. But I wrote about this in the newsletter, and one of my favorite paragraphs that I have ever written was in last week's newsletter about this Built Bar thing. I said, and this is why BYU won't join the Big 12 unless there is an ungodly amount of money involved. BYU has found its autonomous mojo, and they are whipping it around like a prize stud in a field full of mares in heat. And that's what BYU is doing. And like, this is the second time in a 12-month span that you have seen BYU take independence, take a gray area, make a decision that could be controversial, could be maybe not accepted if they ask for permission, and they take it and they run with it, and they have knocked it out of the park. One, everybody out west said, no, we're not playing football. Mountain West, Pac-12, everybody shut down football. BYU was the one school that said, you know what, we think we can do this. We'll figure it out. We're going to play. What happens? They go 11-1. They're in the national spotlight from day one when they put a drubbing against Navy. They're in the national spotlight throughout the rest of the year. Like, awesome. That was BYU taking a risk, a calculated risk, whatever. They had their controls. They had all their stuff. But it was a risk. Like, whether you're a COVID denier or you are, as you know, scared and haven't left your house in 2 years, it was a risk. It was a PR risk. It was a health risk. There were risks involved. That's why all these other schools shut down. But because BYU had the autonomy to make their own decision, they went ahead and they did it, and they were uber aggressive. That's very uncharacteristic for BYU. They're very conservative, but that was a very aggressive decision. This is the same thing with the Built Bar thing. And I think now that we've got two consecutive years, two very aggressive things where BYU finds a gray area, they don't ask for permission. This gets lost. It was in the ESPN article about the Built Bar relationship. BYU did not ask the church for permission on this. It went through BYU's legal team, compliance team. They said, yeah, we think we can do it. They didn't go to the state and ask for permission. They didn't go to the NCAA and ask for permission. They said, I think we got it. There's nothing that's governing it that says that we can't. We're going to do it. And they did it. It went nuts. Everybody loved it, universally accepted as an incredible thing that BYU had done. And now it's like, okay, I dare you, state of Utah, to tell these walk-ons that their school's not paid for. I dare you, NCAA, to put us on sanctions because we're paying for education for more kids. That's twice in 2 years that BYU as an independent has been able to do their own risk assessment, come up with what they believe is a calculated, safe strategy, and go forward in what could be conceived a risky gray area. And they have absolutely hit it out of the park. And now there's a third that BYU has done in the last, I can't remember when it was, in the last couple of months, but when BYU went and hired Diljit Taylor, a non-member, what is she, cross-country coach now?
Yep, she's the women's track and field cross-country coach.
Yeah, she's not a member of the church. Tom Holmoe clarified, he spoke at Education Week today, got emotional as he started talking about it. But Ms. Taylor, Coach Taylor, she is not a member of the church, just an excellent human being. And that Tom said, hey, look, it's always just been practice. And that's funny to me because I've heard from BYU, from Tom Holmoe, that you got to be an active member of the church.
See, but I'd always heard that was only for football and basketball. And the rest, it was just like, it was preferred. Like if they could find someone who was, if the best candidate was like a member, then available, then they would prefer a member of the church because dealing with obviously church stuff and missions and whatever, it adds a different complexity to things, but it was never, you know, a solid thing.
If that's the case, that's even more dumb. Just treat them all the same. But in my mind, we're seeing a new era of BYU athletics that they're doing things like even if it's, you know, I'm saying just in air quotes, I don't mean just to downplay cross country, but it's not football in terms of the public eye being on it, but hiring non-member coaches.
And I mean, even cross country, right? Like that's not a revenue sport. They just won a national championship under Diljit Taylor Singh. I think like 8 of the 10 best times in school history or whatever have come since she got hired as assistant coach. She's an incredible coach, right? Like, but in a non-revenue sport like that, it's almost like backwards. Like it's the fact that it is cross country almost says more. Because you could just go hire a random, like you could go into Utah County and hire any of the high school track coaches and be like, hey, you want to come coach here? Like, we don't care what you
do. If you suck, nobody cares.
Right. If you suck, nobody cares. So you can go find an LDS coach, right? But this was committing to someone who is very, very good.
Yep.
And legitimately, like, you know, coaching the best team in the country, good, very good coach, and committing to them. I think the tides are changing. It won't be as fast change. It never is at BYU because of the things that people have to do with. And there's more bureaucracy and more layers of things to work through. Right. But those tides are changing. And one thing too, that I got mentioned, and shout out to Rex Guando over, I don't remember what his real name is. That's what he has his username set to.
Also what his Twitter name is. We're just calling him Rex Guando. Yeah. I don't
know. And so he was at Education Week and he answered a question and got his ball signed by the team. So congrats to him, but he was live sharing Holmo's presentation and the questions he answered. And, you know, he mentioned
in a very thorough manner that
yes, he did another incredible job
to subscribe to the newsletter. Rex Guando, man, he killed it. We love Mitch Harper. J. Drew, we love you too. Rex Guando kicked the shit out of both of you guys in terms of Education Week coverage. He was all over everything.
And part of that is just because of the platform of like what Discord lends itself to. Like if you are a media person, you have to make sure the tweet's formatted right and whatever. Do it right. Like this, there's no typos. He's on a freaking chat room just typing as fast as he can. It doesn't matter what it comes out as. And so he was saying though that one of the part of the Built for Life thing and the partnership with Built is that Tom wants a CEO like partnered with every athlete. And so it's like cool. For mentorship and like doing like going some professional in something other than sports. Right. And so that is something that is, he also mentioned that Tom was like, I cannot preface when he's like Q&A, by the way, I cannot say anything about conference realignment. That was interesting that, you know, I don't think it's anything, but it could be something, but it's like, if there was nothing happening,
he's never done it before.
Right. It's similar to, we talked about this after media day in June, right? Like it was kind of like, well, we were reevaluating things. He's never said we're reevaluating for, he's just like, independence is good for us. Like, that's and now true. It's like, we're reevaluating things. So I think there's probably some discussions happening and he's doing his job. There should always be those discussions happening, but whatever. But you know, Rex, you know, was saying that it's like, you know, wanting to have that CEO relationship, which Brock, I know you're listening to this because you are a listener of the show. Let's get some linemen in. Like, don't go for the quarterback. I know your kid is a quarterback at Lone Peak. Yeah, I know, like, whatever, but like, show the big ugly some love and let's get some linemen mentorship. I'm happy to sit in on those meetings. So that is something that is really, really cool. And that's something that's very different.
Speaking of linemen, tight end isn't really a lineman.
It's a half.
We are working. We did say as soon as NIL came out, we said we only want non-skill position players.
Yeah.
We didn't want the quarterback. We didn't want the running back, the receiver, linebacker that are going to be everywhere. We wanted the linemen. We wanted tight ends. Lorenzo Faute was our first, and he's great. We are working on the elk. It's coming. Isaac is awesome. I'm excited about it.
Thank you, Amy, Sister Rex, Isaac's mother. Thank you for subscribing to the newsletter. I appreciate that. I know you're a listener and you subscribe. Thanks for hanging out with us.
I'm excited for this design. I've designed a lot of shirts. I've dabbled, right, in in making shirts.
I'm really sad the cocaine hippo design that you paid someone in like Pakistan or whatever, that language barrier that got lost in translation.
And yeah, that's really sad to me. It just wasn't very good. And then by the time I found somebody who I think would do a better job, somebody beat me to it. And there's a really dope cocaine hippo shirt out there. And I just was like, I'm never going to be able to compete. But I had an awesome idea for the elk. We've already done an elk t-shirt, and part of the payment that will go to Isaac Rex for our new shirt and the new shirt sales is a back payment for some of the old shirt.
Don't say that. You're going to get us in trouble.
No. Now it's legal. All of it is legal. Everything's fine now. What am I getting into this in trouble for?
I don't care about us. I care about Isaac. I don't want him to get in trouble.
Oh, he's not getting in trouble either. Because all it was a picture of an elk and a number. But everybody knows now, and now that it's going to be fine. And anyway, I'm so excited. I had this wonderful idea, and I did try. I tried to do it on my own because I mean, Gary, you can tell me if I'm wrong, but my Photoshop skills have improved immensely. Greatly, since we started.
Greatly improved.
Still not like a professional. I do this, just on the side using open source things that are basically free. But they've improved a great deal. I took a stab at this design by myself, and it was just awful. And it wasn't awful. Like, if it were anybody but the elk, I might have run with it. But no, it's such a good idea. And the elk is such a perfect nickname that I needed this one to be perfect. So I went back to Pakistan.
Nothing about Pakistani. This is more of our ability to explain cultural references that they do not understand because it's a different country.
I found a Pakistani in America. And I paid her. I had a conversation with her ahead of time about what I was trying to do. We went through the back and forth of what exactly I meant. And I think we landed in the right spot. And she's coming up with a design that I'm hopeful will be done this week. I paid her extra to just say, hey, no, give me unlimited revisions because this has to be perfect. So we're going to get this right. And once it goes out, it is unequivocally my favorite shirt that we've ever designed.
I have no idea what this design looks like.
I thought I sent it to you.
Did you? I forgot. I don't know. Do you still have it? Send it to me right now. But
it's going to be phenomenal.
I'm really excited about this. And I know this is going way back, but this is something we got sidetracked talking about. Not sidetracked, when we were talking about Diljit Taylor and all the things. And something that you mentioned when you were talking about at Marin Heat was the money, right? And the value of being independent. The value of being independent, obviously there is a financial benefit. BYU makes more money from TV than, like, drastically more money than they would being in the Mountain West. And it was drastically more money than the schools in the American got on their first TV deal. And now it's, a little bit more than what the American is getting now, because the American has separated itself. We've long talked about this. And I think most BYU fans would be okay with moving to the American should it come to that, whatever, based purely on where that is projecting to go. The value, though, the TV money aspect of joining the Big 12, which who knows what that contract is going to look like, sans Oklahoma and Texas, the TV money is a way bigger deal to Texas Tech and Kansas State and Kansas and Iowa State than it is to BYU. Because even if you look at recent things, like the reports that have been out of like revenue, TV money, I know that's the big thing, and people obviously talk about the Big Ten schools are getting $50 million a year, like whatever. The TV money is just one slice of the pie. And there's so much fan support at BYU that other schools do not have. I mean, there's the blue blood schools, and you have like the SEC is the SEC, right? And it's most of the Big Ten, but it's the fan support that you have at BYU is honestly better than pretty much every school. It's better than every school in the entire West outside of maybe Oregon, but that's purely just because of the Nike sales that Oregon gets because of the trend of where people don't care about sports at all, whatever, but they still want to wear Oregon stuff just because Oregon stuff looks cool, right? But in terms of the overall, like you're talking it's not just TV, right? It's ticket revenue, it's concessions, it's just fan donations, it is gear sales, it is like, you know, all of those things in one, right? Like that is what is driving your overall budget. And so if you take that out at Texas Tech, where, I don't know, what's, how big is Texas Tech? Their football stadium. Texas Tech's football stadium, you know, only holds, how many people does it hold? So the record attendance that they've ever had was 61,000 people. So it's all small, but they don't average nearly that much, right? Like it's, that's when they, like, you know, they're selling out games when they've got top ranked teams coming to town, but it's like, they don't have, they don't have the same level of fan support. And so even a couple of years ago after Utah was in the Pac-12, there was like the financial report and it was, they were making like $5 or $8 million more a year than the report, what was reported, than BYU was, but that's including all of the Pac-12 money. Like BYU was almost, the fan support was almost bridging the gap, right? Of the BYU's TV money versus Utah's TV money. Plus Utah has all their NCAA money because the Pac-12 sends more teams to the tourney than, you know, Gonzaga and all that stuff, whatever. And so the TV money is not everything. And so that really, like, just to underscore what you were saying of the Big 12 thing, like there's got to be some ungodly amount of money to make it worth it, because going into a sinking ship, like it's your nope shirt is very apt right now. And it's very like, I think it's, you know, we've talked a lot this a lot, and a lot of people think like, oh, well, they need to do it to have a clear cut shot at the playoff because of a 12 team playoff. It's like, no, to win that league, you'd have to go 11-1 anyway. You look at our future schedules, you go 11-1. If we went 11-1 this year, we're going to be ranked in the top 12. Simple as that. Like, and it's not, you know, it's winning fixes all our problems. And there's a huge, immense value beyond just dollars and cents of just being in charge of your own shit and not having to listen to anybody else.
Huge. Huge. So those are our thoughts on the Built Bar. We got to move along with the show because we can talk.
Talking about Built Bar.
Well, yeah, oh. And this frankly is really kind of our brand of like getting into the off the field stuff about the sports. But we got to move along, and that's not to say that we're talking about this too long. It's I'm getting tired. I'm rewatching Yellowstone, and I'm ready to move this show along so I can get back into Yellowstone. In fact, I bought a Stetson. So that I can wear my cowboy hat while I watch Yellowstone in bed in my underwear.
How nice of a Stetson did you buy? Because there's like $600 Stetsons.
Yeah, no, not the top of the line, but it's not the first cowboy hat I've ever owned. Like, let's get real with who I am. I am the son of two different dairy farmers. I still have very deep ties to a billion different dairy farms. I'm the only one. My mom is the only one of her family. My dad is the only one of his family up until the last couple of years that has left Cache Valley and left the farming adjacent world. So like, it's not wildly crazy for me. So no, it's not the top of the line, but it's not the bottom of the line either. So that's nice.
Okay.
But yeah, you're right. There's like $2,500 Stetson hats. It's not that. But anyway, moving along, we did have a little Q&A on the thread. The thread, the Discord channel, we have a thread about Q&A. In case you've missed this tone of this entire episode, the Discord channel is great. Give Them Help Brigham newsletter is great. Please subscribe to the newsletter so you can participate in things like this in the future.
Shout out to Brendan for actually using the thread, because the only one. Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty sure he works for Apple or Google or Facebook or something like that. So he's a little more tech inclined. But yes, I did create a specific thread and then everyone just replied in the same thing.
I think we can blame Mike Polson. Everybody just followed his lead. So Mike, this is on you.
And you can usually safely blame Mike Polson for most things. Oh. Yeah.
So first question. By way of Mike,
you did send me back to the elk thing. I'm just looking at now. You did send me that, and I forgot about it. And it is glorious.
It's incredible, right?
Yeah.
The only thing that could be we got to see what it looks like. I'm excited about it. First question: who is nobody talking about right now that will be a household name in November? And I want to, before we go into your answer here, I want to just add my thoughts. I'm not going to answer the question, frankly, because I want to hear your answer. But who is nobody talking about right now? Well, nobody really can talk about anybody right now because we are in this era of college football where everything that happens at practice is protected as if it's a Pentagon level secret. Like everybody's being very careful that there's no leaks about anything, that there's no who, like the coaches, know Jaren Hall's going to play quarterback. We've been telling you this for weeks. I think Jaren Hall knows that Jaren Hall's going to be the quarterback. I think everybody knows that Jaren Hall's going to be the starting quarterback.
Right.
But like, heaven forbid, we let that out ahead of time and give any sort of competitive advantage. I'm so grateful for Jed Fish. I don't know how good of a head coach he's going to be in Arizona. I have no idea. I hope he's not good on week one, right? Like I have no clue how good he's going to be, but he's bringing an NFL way of thinking to at least to training camp where he's having fan days and opening up practices. Like I think he said 7 or 8 times throughout fall camp, he's not locking anything down until they get into game prep. And then it'll be locked down. Practice won't be viewable to the media during the season when it's game prep and you're prepping for a specific opponent, which is how the NFL does it, which is how I think everybody should do it. And it's how everybody used to do it. But now it's like, oh my gosh, we are doing something so crazy, innovative and unique, and it's going to just blow your socks off. We can't let anybody see anything about practice ever. And have you listened to the press conferences? Like Kalani's gotten really good over the last few years of non-answers.
The coach speak.
But like all of them now, all of them. Elisa Tuiaki made me laugh. People would ask him about players and like who's standing out behind the big three linebackers or whatever. He literally had like a copy of the roster, a copy of the depth chart. I don't know. He had something in front of him and he was just reading off all of the names of the people who play that position. He was talking about the guys who stood out on the defensive line. He named like 16 guys and you could watch him as he's reading his paper and say, I can't see what that name, I can't see what that name says right there. Like they're just reading the name. These answers are meaningless. They're absolutely meaningless.
I'm sorry, Mitch. Mitch asked a softball to Elisa Tuiaki yesterday. And what did he ask? Is like, what, how do you think we're going to be at stopping the run?
How confident are you? Yeah.
And then he was just like, pretty confident.
It was
just
funny.
Straight face, nothing. But it's like, that's what coaches do, right? Like, it's the players are much more intriguing to listen to because you can tell, like, when players comment about a guy making a play, you know, that's the something you can kind of key in on, right? Because players don't think about those things the way coaches do. So I honestly don't listen to the coaching things. I only listen to the player interviews.
So to Mike's question, my answer, who is nobody talking about right now? Well, literally everybody is being talked about in some facet because the coaches are being very intentional of not giving you anything at all. So with that preface, let me pass that question to you, Garrett. Who is nobody talking about that will be a household name?
Well, I guess what depends on household, like how much does somebody have to do something to become a household name, right? Like I think anyone who's listening to the show or is a BYU fan, to them, George Udo or Tyler Batty would be household names based on the flashes that they showed in limited minutes last year.
It's true.
Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I agree with that.
So my household name, and we actually put this down as, you know, and this is actually, you know, we did have it before I opened up the Q&A thread and Mike asked this. So he did say like, you know, players to keep an eye on. And I said, Josh Singh. Now, Josh Singh is a true freshman walk-on defensive tackle from Orem High School. That is a very low bar to clear, right? But if you watch his tape, he is probably of anybody, any D lineman in the program, he just like, he has the nasty streak about him, right? Like, and he is good with he plays with his hands. He's kind of like the Tijon Kuroma of nose guards, right? Like, yeah. If you look on 24/7, he's listed at 5'11", 255. I don't know what BYU roster has him listed as.
I've met Josh a couple of different times. I'm 6 foot even, and there is not a chance
BYU has him listed at 6'2", 260, right? Yeah, and he's very small, very undersized, and so that's why no one offered.
And right. I say this with all sincerity. He's a hell of a player. I am 6 foot even. There's no chance that he is 6 feet tall.
Right. And so with that, right, like you're looking at, if you watch his tape, you can see like, man, if this kid was taller, everybody would be all over him. He is so technically sound. He plays very violent.
He is insanely strong.
Yes.
And that's one thing that Elisa really, really values. Like, he doesn't talk about it, but you can just tell based on guys like Nysa Mahe, Josh Larson, like even like Caden Chittister. He's offered guys to play defensive line that are just freak strong. Josh Singh is one of those guys. Like, he is a weight room beast. He's just a freaky strong dude. And I think that's part of Elisa's philosophy at defensive line is, hey, if you're a freaky strong guy, I don't care what size you are, if you could pick somebody up and move them, then I can make that work.
Right. And Caden Hawes is kind of the same way, right? Like, he's 6'2". Yep. He's not a big like run stuffing size, right? But he's just strong and he's got good arms. And Josh Singh, though, I think he may have a couple flashes this year and he may like get a thing where people are really looking forward to him in the future. But I think he is going to really surprise people and be, I mean, I don't know if he'll be a Dax Milne level walk-on, but he's going to be a guy that's going to be very solidly in rotation for the rest of his career. Maybe not this year, or maybe this year, but I think he will have some flashes. And maybe against Idaho State, he may have like 4 sacks and people are going to be like, what the hell? Why hasn't he been playing all year long? Right. But I think Josh Singh is my guy on the team right now.
Which is a great answer, because that's the next question, or who are your guys? And you just, did that intentionally or not.
Oh, I have a different answer for that.
so he's your guy, but he's not your guy.
Well, I mean, that's the name, the household name in November, my guy of like, who are we riding with? Right. I think the guy who makes everything click is Tyler Allgeier. Tyler Allgeier has to be the guy for 2021, right? Like, he is, I mean, especially if we're talking, because I think like nothing can be more well, and obviously, I mean, he needs to carry the load and needs to stay healthy to really like be able to make it easy on the quarterbacks. And obviously they have a ton of people to throw to. And a lot of it too comes down to the O-line and what are they gonna do, right? And so you could say like, oh, it's gotta be like Barrington, right? Like, we know what James Empey is, but like Barrington or Blake Freeland needs to take the next step and it all hinges on him, right? But it's, if you're talking about people that's like easy to follow, want them to do, it's like, I think Tyler Allgeier is my guy. I'm not worried about the defense. Stevens is going to be fine. They're getting the majority of the people back the way the scheme is, and just, you know, playing a gap like Caden Hawes, Nysa Mahe, they're strong as hell and going to be able to do that. I don't know if you saw that, who casually slipped in, someone, one of the defensive players casually like slipped in that, it was Lopa Leotawa casually slipped in that Nysa Mahe is stronger than Kairos Tonga.
Yeah. I believe that, like, Nysa coming out of, I remember when they offered him when he was out of West Jordan High, it was the year after Alden Tofa was offered, and Alden Tofa had offers from, you know, Notre Dame, Utah, everybody. And then we offered Nysa Mahe, and I think we were writing for Rivals at the time. I couldn't come up with anything really positive to say about Nysa Mahe. He was small. He was even smaller. Like, he was like 5'10" out of West Jordan. His film was fine. It wasn't spectacular. It was fine. It felt like an offer that was, well, it felt a lot like what Brady Christensen's offer felt like when it went out. Like, this is kind of a throwaway and it's probably going to be a waste. The only like thing that I could write that was really undeniably true about Nysa Mahe was like, this dude could pick up a truck. Like, if you need to have somebody move a portable house with their own arms, Nysa Mahe was your guy. That was true when he was a junior and a senior in high school.
Well, and if you look at this, and if you look at this picture of like what he, you know, even like when he was at West Jordan, it's like, he was thick in high school, but he still had like clearly defined triceps.
Oh yeah.
Well, like, he had the horseshoe, right? Like,
he was insane.
He's an ox.
He was insane. And so clearly I was wrong, the same way I was wrong about Brady Christensen. Then they turned out to be pretty darn good players. But I absolutely believe that Nisamahe is stronger than Kairos Tonden. Like, I believe that Nisamahe could enter a World's Strongest Man competition one day and win, and it would not be at all surprising. Like, he is a freak of nature when it comes to how strong he is. Yeah.
So who is your household name, and who is your guy? I guess I'm rephrasing the your guy to be like,
yeah.
Who do we need to see step up for things to go well?
My household name is going to be Caleb Hayes. Nobody's talking about him. And I think he's going to start alongside Keenan Ellis, and I think he's going to be BYU's best cover corner. And my guy, I disagree with you. Like, I think, and it has nothing to do with what you said. I think everything you said about Algier is right. But I have a lot more confidence in Lapini Katoa, Miles Davis, Sione Finau, Hinkley Ropati than I think most people do. Like, Lapini is still, I mean, even on our own board last night, people are like, oh man, like, I'm glad Miles Davis is doing well.
Lapini is not treated well enough by fans.
Oh my gosh. And people are like, well, can Miles Davis be the running back? And then just like Lapini plays on like passing downs. Lapini Katoa has nearly 300 career carries and is averaging 5 yards a carry. That's the same yards per carry average, and no small sample size. It's not like he's on 20 carries in one game against an FCS school. This is 300 carries. Harvey Unga was 5 yards a carry. Curtis Brown was 5 yards a carry. Like, Jamal Williams was like 5.4 yards a carry. Like, what Lapini does is incredibly dynamic in his own right, and he's the best pass blocker on the team. Lapini Katoa is incredibly good. He may not look incredibly good. Like, he doesn't look like an NFL running back, but I don't really care. Like, okay, Najee Harris was a 5-star running back, played at Alabama. Like, I get it. But when you watch Najee Harris play compared to Derrick Henry or Mark Ingram or some of the other Alabama running backs, he runs a little tall. He looks a little bit funny. Like, he doesn't run like a typical Alabama running back. He's probably the best of the bunch in terms of what they did at Alabama, but he doesn't really look like it when you just watch him play. Everybody needs to get over what they think they're seeing with Lapini Katoa and just pay attention to his production, because he's productive as hell. So having said that, I'm more confident than you are, I think, in saying that everything has to go through Tyler Algier. I don't think it does. I think that there's a lot of guys behind him who could step up and be maybe not quite Tyler Algier, but be very good. So my guy, oh man, I mean, my guy's going to be, it's probably Zoe. I mean, I could make an argument for any number of defensive linemen, but I think a guy like Zoe is going to, he has to have a big year. He has to. Uriah Leotawa, he has to have a big year this year. It's those guys who were fairly highly touted recruits that are upperclassmen now. In Lopa's case, he's a senior. Like, this is it for him. Those guys have to have a big year. They have to be the leaders, and they have to show why we were all so excited about him as recruits. And I think, because of what they have to bring to the table, I know that they're talented enough. And for both Lopa and Zoe, it's been injuries that have kept them off the field and kept them from hitting that potential. To me, it's those guys. They've got to stay healthy. They've got to live up to it. The one thing that this defense lacks, and I'm not talking about a pass rush. We're going to talk about that ad nauseum throughout the year, I'm sure. But I'm more worried about stopping the run. And I think that those guys, if they just play up, if they play healthy, right? If they could stay right, healthy for 12 games, the rush defense automatically gets better. So to me, it's pick one, Lopa or Zoe. Those are my guys.
I can get down with that. And it's, I was actually talking to a friend the other day about this and the defensive line. And that really is the biggest concern of the defense, right? And that's kind of been that way for the last couple of years, right? It's weird because we have, you know, Caleb Hayes in the secondary, Chaz Ayuz back. Like, I'm not worried about the defense at all, right? And it's, we had a ton of young corners who have gotten a bunch of playing time, and now they're kind of growing up and they're upperclassmen or, you know, have starting experience. And even the guys that have brought in, like Michael Harper, played great as a freshman last year. You know, that's fine. We have, you know, we've gotten, you know, got Chris Wilcox drafted. Like, I'm not worried about the DBs. I'm not worried about what Max Tooley and Peyton Wilgar are going to do, you know, as line, Drew Jensen as linebackers. It's like, can you just depend on the defensive line to be consistent? Because, and a lot of it is injuries, but we've just lost a ton of guys, right? Like, and it's, you know, it's, you know, Longi Tuifua didn't pan out. Lopa Leotau has been hurt the entire time he's been here. Lorenzo Fawatea has been hurt. Alden Tofa, you know, he hasn't panned out to what people thought he would pan out to. So it's just a lot of raw talent that just hasn't taken that step. And it's like, this is kind of the year where they need to do it.
Yep. Without a doubt. That's my answer. I'm going to need you to filibuster for me because I'm currently going through and just putting together all of Lopini Katoa's P5 stats because I'm tired of that narrative as well, that he doesn't perform against the big teams. So I'm just going to...
I glanced at that. The thing is, this may be something for, there may be something today because really you got to compare it against, well, what else did BYU do against that day? Because it's like you look at some of them, it's like, okay, well, like Tennessee and Utah in 2019. Okay, it's, well, we had Tyson Williams. That's why he wasn't doing it because he was the second, he was like third string guy, right? Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, he wasn't the guy, you know, so it's crap. Like you look at what he did against San Diego State last year, what he did against Boise, like those are good teams. You can say they're G5, whatever, but they are very good defenses and he torched them. Like it's not, and either way, it's when you're a back, it's more dependent on the offensive line than anything. Like it's
you're
not,
right.
Like if you don't have holes to run through, then
you're right. I gotta stop. I gotta let my affinity for Pini go to the wayside a little bit. I love Lopini Katoa, and he is the most disrespected player, maybe in BYU history. Like the dude can flat play. Next question, again from Mike. What game that most people see will be a toss-up or very close are you the most confident in, and which one are you the least confident in? I am the most confident in Virginia. Like, I know everybody's afraid of Bronco, like he's the ghost of Christmas past, but Virginia's just not very good. They just aren't. And
so is Idaho State off the table?
Yeah,
for this game. Okay.
Well, it's because the qualifier is what game that most people see will be a toss up.
Oh, okay.
Most confident and least confident in. So for me, it's Virginia. I just don't think they're very good. It's a long travel. It's in the middle of their ACC season. Outside of Bronco and being emotional, like the players aren't going to care. It's BYU and they have to travel in the middle of the year. That sucks. And if there's one thing that Bronco proved that he struggles with, it's those emotional rivalry type games. And so I'm very confident in that game. On the flip side, I'm very not confident in Washington State. Because that offense is tough. Nick Rolovich is nuts, and so who knows if he's even going to be the coach at that point.
The governor of Washington just signed a thing today saying that all university employees have to get vaccinated.
And he's very against it, so who knows? He may not even be there. But that run-and-gun offense is tough. BYU doesn't travel forever. Right. And then they finally leave the state and they play Baylor, but then they have to turn around the next week and go to Pullman. That just feels like that's a tricky game, a tough offense to prepare for on the fly, and really kind of the opposite of what Jeff Grimes is going to be doing down there at Baylor. I think that Washington State game, I might have it earmarked as a loss. I still have to see a little bit of whether it's going to be Jarrett Garantano or Jaden Delora playing quarterback up there. But that game feels like an ugly game for me.
Right. I would probably have to go with both of those. I think what most people would say is a toss-up. I am confident that ASU is going to be a win. I think regardless of what happens against Utah, it will be motivating one way or the other. And the off-the-field mess and then having them at home in the altitude, I think ASU is going to be a win. I think it'll be a close win. It's not going to be a blowout, but I think, and that will be right. And whoever, you know, if it's Jaron or Jacob Conover, whoever it is, that will be week three as the starter settled into a groove, like, no, all the jitters out. And we're going to win the Territorial Cup. We're going to beat Arizona. We're going to beat Arizona State. And I'm going to claim the Territorial Cup for us.
And then we will officially own all of, like, if we beat Arizona and Arizona State, do we get claim to like tacos? Like, is that officially a Utah food now?
I mean, I guess.
Maybe. I guess if Utah does it too, if BYU beats both of the Arizona schools and Utah beats both of the Arizona schools, what food do we get to usurp from Arizona and claim as our own? It's got to be something. I'll take the steak fingers that I made in honor of Tucson because those were delicious.
I will be honest. In all the times I've been to Tucson, I've never seen steak fingers. So
yeah, I'm a little bit disappointed in you because I'm
more disappointed that you didn't go with the snoring hot dog.
Well, it's because I thought about it. That was my next choice.
You just wanted, everyone thinks of that. So you wanted to go something a little.
No, it was easier for me. Every time we do like a UCLA or USC, I end up doing something with tacos, but I wanted to do hot dogs because of Pink's hot dogs in LA. Mm. Have you ever heard of this?
Yes.
Where all the celebrities go. So I already had a hot dog on the menu. And Lucky Wishbone, it's a local fast food place in Tucson, founded in Tucson. There's 8 locations now in the Tucson area, and steak fingers are like their go-to thing. So next time you're in Tucson, find a Lucky Wishbone, try the steak fingers, and then subscribe to the newsletter so that you can get the recipe for my steak fingers that are what you will get at Lucky Wishbone, but elevated and better.
Yes. Okay. Well, next time I'm down there, I'll have to look and see. Oh, is that really right there? Let's do Lucky Wish. Okay. I know where that's at. I've been down there before. Our next question. This is our last question. This, and Brendan did ask this, and this is our kind of last thing we have up here. Oh, the last thing we have besides the Migao brothers, I think everyone is all hit that really quick. This just needs a quick blurb. They're going to Utah State. They had academic issues. There's questions on if they could qualify. BYU did not have the room to want to take them on a qualifier, nor do I think they should have. Right? I have serious questions. If you can't qualify coming out of high school, it's probably unlikely you're going to figure it out. Hopefully Utah State was willing to take a flyer on them. Best of luck to them. I hope they do figure it out because they're very talented, and I would be very sad to see that talent be wasted.
I hope they make it. Man, we've had the Miguels on the show. They're just great kids, and I don't care where they play. They deserve to have success, so I hope.
But they got to take care of business in the classroom.
Yeah, so. I hope it works out for them because they're awesome.
And so the last question that we have before we get wrapped up today says, who's the most important player on the team? Not the best player, the most important player. No QB is allowed. And then, I guess he actually offered 2 questions.
He has 2 questions. Yeah.
So as the most important player, I guess we kind of talked about this of like, who's our guy, right? Like we kind of talked with the D line. I think we'd say outside of QB, it's the D line. And then probably, I mean, which one of the offensive linemen stepping up and cementing themselves? Would you say it's Blake Freeland shifting to the left side and being the backside tackle?
I would actually say it's James Empey that's the most important. That if he goes down, yikes. Like, he's the glue that holds it together.
Yeah.
He's the glue that I think will help Harris LeChance and Blake Freeland understand assignments, get the coverage, you know, everything that they need to do, their shifts, all that stuff. He makes them better. They have to step up, but they can't get hurt either because there's not a lot behind them.
Right.
But to me, it's James Empey and what he brings in terms of experience and just a steadiness to that offensive line that he will elevate to that entire group. If he goes down, then we're in a world of hurt.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. And it's not that there's not a lot behind. There's a lot of bodies. They're just very unproven and young. So it's That's kind of what happens when you had the situation that we had in 2018 when Grimes first got here, where everybody on the offensive line, the 5 starters you rolled out were either freshmen or sophomores.
Right.
So they all leave at the same time. And then you're kind of like it, you have to break that. You have to slowly work through that cycle until you get in a good rhythm of, you know, mixing a sophomore, a junior, and a senior and have some continuity.
James is freaky smart too. It doesn't get talked about. Mateos would talk about it all the time that Empey was one of the smartest, if not the smartest players he's ever coached. Not the most talented necessarily, but smartest for sure. And that's what you want in a center, is just somebody who's brilliant. I think he's a 4.0 student. I mean, like, he's smart in all aspects of his life. And so, yeah, I mean, James Impey, that's the guy. The other question that Brandon has, what does Funk bring to the table that Mateos didn't? Any word about how the O-line transition has been? No word about the transition other than it's going well. Why has there not been a word? Because the coaches don't answer questions and nobody's allowed to look at anything, so there's no leaks. So don't blame us. Blame Kalani. Sorry, Kalani. But as for what Funk brings to the table that Mateos didn't, and I don't mean this negative, Brandon, I don't like the way that that question is phrased, simply because I don't think that it's what one does or doesn't have. I think that Funk brings a level of experience that Mateos did not have. Mateos had Grimes, and so that helped fill that void. So in terms of experience on the team, it existed. So the team still had it. But in terms of being able to go into a recruit's home and look them in the eyes and talk about all of the success that they've had over two decades of coaching college offensive linemen, Mateos didn't have that. He's just young. But Funk does. And I don't really care where he's been. Like, the dude can talk about what it was like recruiting in the Big Ten, playing, coaching at Michigan. He can call up Taylor Lewan at the Tennessee Titans, one of the best tackles, one of the best offensive linemen in the NFL. He could talk to him at any given time. Like, he coached him for 3 years at Michigan. He coached NFL dudes at San Diego State. Like, he has a long history at multiple D1, P5 type schools doing very, very good things. And Mateos just didn't have that. And so that experience, what does that bring? Like, that experience allows – it allows – Aaron Roderick. That experience allows Kevin Kloon to coach defense instead of having that extra assistant on the offensive side. If Jeff Grimes were Aaron Roderick, right? Let's take Grimes out of the equation. And let's say that the offensive coordinator is Aaron Roderick last year. Mateos is the offensive line coach and Kevin Kloon is coaching linebackers. You are so freaked out, not because Mateos isn't capable, but because Mateos has only been coaching D1 ball for 3, 4, 5 years, like, you're scared of how quickly can he make adjustments? How quickly can he get his guys up to speed? Has he even seen everything that you're going to see in any given year? That experience is valuable. Now, Grimes is able to fill that void, but what that meant is that the defense had to play with a coach down, right? That meant that, right, Elisa Tuiaki was coaching 24 different defensive linemen while coordinating a defense. Like, that's not ideal for anybody. So what does Funk bring that Mateos didn't? It's that experience that Kalani is. He's pulling the, you know, the puppet strings on all of these different coaches and organizing everything. He can say, okay, he's got the offensive line. Whether they're good or bad, we'll find out. But we don't have to worry about helping him because of inexperience. Funk is going to go and do whatever Funk is going to do, and his results are going to be based on him, right? It's not going to be, well, he's young and he's learning. It's what you see is what you get. We'll find out if it's good or bad, but we're going to give it to him. We don't have to worry about it. Like, that's valuable. So,
yep. And it's a lot of people, you know. Funk has kind of hopped around. Obviously, he went to Michigan and did his time in the Big Ten, and then was at Purdue for a cup of coffee. And there's so much of it, obviously, is like, it's offensive staffs are offensive staffs. They're not just coaches, right? Like, it's, how do I say this? It's like, you need the entire thing. Like, they're all cogs in the whole machine. And there isn't just like one guy that's going to magically make everything work. And so you can't just look at, well, they did horrible here. And that's honestly, looking at putting guys in the league is usually generally a pretty good indicator, like, more so of an indicator, because it means like, okay, well, even if they didn't put up points, scouts, like, people at the next level liked what they did and got their guys to do. Even if, you know, because if your quarterback can't hit the broadside of a barn, doesn't matter how good your pass protection is, right? And the O-line coach doesn't get credit. And so it's, I think, in terms of, you know, technique and everything, like, it's going to be fine. And really, like, O-line, it's a matter, and especially at BYU, right? Like, the recruiting at BYU, we've talked about this a bunch, O-line is more or less going to take care of itself. And it's just a matter of, like, can you explain what you're doing to the kids, and can you get them to be mean? And that's really all it is. And I think Funk will not have a problem with that at all.
Yeah, I agree with that. this show has gone on. When we talked about this show at the beginning of the show, I think I made the comment of like, this is not going to be a very long show. There's just not a lot to talk about. But we have managed to fill like 90 minutes worth of time.
Oh, yeah.
We can talk, man. We can talk with the best of them.
We can shoot the bull with the best of them. Mm-hmm. And it's been a great episode. Again, check out, go to givehemhellbrigham.com. You can sign up for the newsletter for free there, as well as there's the, in the top, you can see Discord. Click that link. It will pull you into the Discord server. Come join us. It's a fun time. And share this show with your friends. And hopefully we're like super famous. And like, I don't know, you're meeting with that guy tomorrow. So maybe by Friday, we should be able to retire. If all goes according to plan, and do this full time, we could start doing daily episodes. I don't know, but we could.
If this is our job, we can. I actually had an idea, and I want to do this with a mind, YouTube channel, and we could do the same kind of thing on the podcast, I guess. But a YouTube channel where we just review all the, you know, like the crappy ads you see on TikTok and Instagram of like trying to sell you stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And it always looks really cool. I don't know if you've ever ordered one and been swindled by those ads, but it almost always is a fail that the entire YouTube channel is just reviewing the ads of crap that social media ads are trying to sell you. We're going to buy the products and review them.
It's kind of like those two Australian dudes, like the Factor Cap guys. Yeah. But like, yep. Okay. I could see that.
So like I'll buy a pair of the TikTok leggings, see if it makes my butt look good. Like it says, the ad says that your butt will be the talk of the room. So we'll see.
That can go both ways, good or bad. So I'm sure one way or the other, that's probably a factual statement.
Just got to see if it's going to live up to the marketing campaign, man.
I want to get that picture out of my head. And so with that, Jeff, we will end on that note. Give him hell, man.
Give him hell.